The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Before any of that, we're going to talk about assisted dying. So as you're all well aware at this stage, that Oireachtas Committee has recommended to government that we legislate and legalise assisted dying in this country. It would be in very prescriptive circumstances. You would have to have a terminal diagnosis and only 6 months or less to live. Similar legislation, or certainly legislation that allows for assisted dying in other circumstances, exists on statute books around the world. Amongst places it does exist is Canada. Senator Jim Cowan is a board member with Dying with Dignity Canada, and he is with me. Jim, you are welcome to the Hard Shoulder, and thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. Can you tell us a little bit about how people can avail of this service in Canada? How does it work, and who qualifies?
Well, it's thank you for having me, first of all. I appreciate that. In Canada, we've had assisted dying since 2016, when the Criminal Code of Canada federal statute was amended to permit medical assistance in dying, as we call it, under certain restricted circumstances. First of all, it's available to people. You have to be adult. You have to be over 18. You have to have competence. You have to be competent to make decisions such as this. You have to be a Canadian. We don't have, we don't allow people who are not Canadians to avail themselves of this service. You have to have what is called a grievous and irremediable condition, and that's a serious illness or disease or disability. You have to be in an advanced state of decline, and most importantly, you have to be suffering intolerably, in a way that's not acceptable to you and can't be relieved under any treatment or conditions which are acceptable to you.
Sorry to cut across to you, Jim. Are they kind of subjective tests, as it were? You know, once you describe the condition or the situation as intolerable, is that enough to qualify, or are there kind of objective definitions?
Well, it's intolerable in the eyes of the patient,
okay,
of the person. And I was just going to say that there are safeguards in place that the person has to make a written request, and then they have to be assessed by two independent medical professionals, clinicians, who have to agree that the person meets these criteria. You're correct. It's subjective in the sense that it is in the eyes of the individual and not in the eyes of the assessor as to whether that condition or the suffering is intolerable. It's intolerable to the person who's suffering.
How many people avail of the service every year, Jim?
Well, if you can just give me one moment, I have those statistics. I called them up this morning, and I have them right here, if you can just hang on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, you take your time. While you're getting them up, I'll just remind people unlike the situation in Canada, in Ireland, the recommendation from the Oireachtas Committee, now it's only a recommendation, we do not know what the government will do. In all likelihood, we have an election coming up in less than a year. It will be the job of the next government. I don't think this government are going to tackle this issue. But the recommendation is much more prescriptive than Jim describes. It would be an irreversible illness, a terminal illness, and only 6 months to live. And a doctor would have to certify that a patient only has 6 months to live before they can avail of it. So, Jim, what are those figures? How many people in Canada avail of it?
Can I, just on that last point, if you don't mind, I'll just elaborate on that. The original law, as passed in 2016, said that your natural death had to be reasonably foreseeable. It didn't say within 3 months or 6 months or a year, but it said that your natural death had to be reasonably foreseeable. And that was attacked in court by two individuals who had intolerable suffering, but their suffering was not going to lead to death within a certain time frame.
Okay.
And the court struck that down and said that was unconstitutional. That offended our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is part of our Constitution. So that was removed. So no longer does your natural death have to be reasonably foreseeable? That's a good one. In Canada, you were asking about statistics. 2022 is the last year for which we have statistics available. Mm-hmm. And in 2022, there were a little over 13,000 persons who had made, and that's about 4% of all deaths in Canada.
Okay. So not an insignificant figure.
No, that's right. And it does vary across the country from a high of about 4% down to, in some provinces, as low as 2%.
That's interesting that there's a regional difference. Jim, I understand there was issues as well, and maybe it's the subject of ongoing discussion, about allowing people to access these services, these Dying with Dignity services, where they are suffering from mental health problems. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, all of this was begun when there was a case before the Supreme Court of Canada, the name of Carter, and that struck down some provisions in the criminal code, which made it criminal to assist somebody to take their own life. So that was the genesis of all of this. And it made no distinction between physical illness and mental illness. But when and because in most cases, mental illness, the suffering that you have with mental illness isn't going to lead to your foreseeable death. It's hard to put a time frame on it. So it wasn't really an issue until that natural death being reasonably foreseeable criterion was removed, as I said a moment ago. And once that became clear, then the barrier to assessing it by persons whose suffering was mental, but caused by mental illness, was removed. So the legislation put in, it postponed for a period of 2 years, or so-called sunset clause, postponed the coming into effect of that. And during that period of time, there were some studies done by experts. There were educational modules prepared for practitioners. There were practice standards developed. And we hope that when the 2 years came up, that those whose suffering was caused by mental illness would be on an equal footing with, but the government then said, no, we need another year. So it was postponed again for another year until just last week. And in the last month, Parliament has passed a law which postpones the date until 2027. So there is still an exclusion. If your suffering is caused solely by mental illness, then you cannot access MAID in Canada. And to my mind, that's discriminatory. I can't speak for your country, but certainly in Canada, there's been a stigma attached to mental illness, and people have been discriminated against because of their mental illness for years. And it's ironic, I think, that here in 2024, we're making that problem worse, and we're extending it so that suffering, which is caused by mental illness, doesn't afford you the same rights that it does if your illness is physical in causation.
Jim, listen. So that's the situation will persist on that front until 2027. It's been interesting to hear how it works there. Senator Jim Cowan is a board member with Dying with Dignity. Canada, Dignitas, I guess, in this part of the world is the service in Switzerland that gets much attention. And my next guest now knows all about it because she is called Sue Lawford. She's a humanist celebrant. She was arrested after accompanying a woman called Sharon to Dignitas in Switzerland. Sharon was wheelchair bound due to a fall that left her paralyzed from the neck down. Sue, thank you for joining us today to tell us your story and Sharon's story. You didn't know Sharon all that well. Can I ask, how did you end up accompanying her and why?
I was asked whether or not I would be willing to accompany her to Dignitas when she decided she wanted to go. And as you can imagine, it's not the sort of question that you're asked every day. But I've been a supporter of the campaign for a very long time, and also a humanist for a very long time. And I came to the conclusion over the next two or three days, as I was sort of thinking about whether I'd be prepared to do this, that if I was in Sharon's situation, I would hope that somebody would step forward and help me, because she really didn't seem to have anybody else that she turned to.
What did that help look like?
Simply accompanying her. I mean, the application had all been completed. She'd got the green light. It was simply that because of the level of her incapacity in her situation, and it's almost a disability discrimination question, I believe, she simply would not have been able to go unless somebody had been there to support her. I said that I would. It was quite soon after that, the end of January 22, she said everything that she needed to do had been done, and she wanted to go in February. And I met them at a service station on the motorway and continued the journey to Heathrow with them. Now, Sharon had to have carers pretty much round the clock to help with her physical needs. And it would be about 7:30 in the morning, I guess, that the carers would have arrived and found her gone. And we assumed that they must have, although they knew that she'd applied to Dignitas, I don't think they knew when exactly she was going. And we can only assume that they reported her missing, because not long after I joined the journey in Cardiff, the first call came from the police, who expressed concern for her well-being.
What did you say to the police?
Well, I didn't speak to them. Sharon reassured them that she was perfectly okay, and, you know, that initially she said she was just visiting friends for a couple of days. But there were two other calls during the journey, and also a call from social services. So there was obviously some concern about how she'd arrived at this sort of decision. And so her stress levels on the journey, as you can probably imagine, I mean, it's a difficult enough thing to be doing anyway, but obviously it increased her stress.
And describe to me the process in Dignitas, you know, when you arrive there and what that is.
Okay. So there was a carer there to meet us, a lovely lady called Andrea. And Sharon had to be transferred by ambulance from the airport. So the ambulance crew got her into bed. And Andrea sort of made sure that we knew where everything was within the flat. We had to go directly to the Dignitas house. The doctor came about an hour later and had a conversation with Sharon to go over her reasons. And then I guess after about half an hour, three quarters of an hour, he left. And then not long after that, the Swiss police arrived because the Wales police had asked them to come and check on her and sort of make sure she wasn't being coerced in any way. They were there for about an hour and a half and then left, satisfied that everything was above board. The following morning, the doctor came again and asked Sharon if she was still certain she wanted to go ahead, and she was. And so he wrote the prescription, and the carers who were there that morning made up the prescription. She had an antiemetic because the drugs that one has to take are very bitter.
Yeah.
She had an antiemetic about half an hour before, then took the medication, and within a very, very short time, I mean, literally minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, she was gone.
And who was there with her? Just yourself, or are there doctors there? What's that moment like?
Two carers from Dignitas were there supporting Sharon, and obviously I was there as her sort of companion. After she'd gone, there's nothing much more to do, and after she'd gone, I made my way back to the airport. Now, I managed to get an earlier flight than the flight I was intending to get. So I came back 2 or 3 hours earlier than anticipated. Had I got the original flight, I would have been arrested at Heathrow. But as it was, I managed to get back to Cardiff in sort of blissfully unaware of what was in store. And it was about 5:30 the following morning that there was a loud banging on the door and the police came and arrested me. And they also, some other officers came into the house and searched the house.
We're just out of time, but Sue, I tell you what, can you come on maybe and tell us about that story from this point on? Because I think so many of our listeners are going to be struck by it. Sue Lawford, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Honestly, it's my pleasure.
And thank you as well to Senator Jim Cowan from Canada. I know I've said this before and I'll say it again. We don't need a referendum on this issue, unlike other issues in recent years. The government could pass this legislation tomorrow on foot of that Oireachtas Committee recommendation. And I'm not quite sure we've had the requisite discussion or debate about exactly what that would look like. You know, whether you're for or against this.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
On News Talk.